You're listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense with your host, Doug Thorpe. Here's Doug.
Well, hello again, everyone. This is Doug Thorpe, and you're listening to another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense. Today, we are going to explore the topic called strategic narrative. And those are words you've probably heard somewhere along the way in your management or leadership career. But my guest is someone who has kind of perfected the design and the method. His name is Guillaume Viat.
Yeah, Doug, you got it right.
If you look in our show notes, you'll see that there's an interesting spelling there, and but we'll dwell on that later. But yeah, Guillaume, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Doug. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so Guillaume is the creator of this model or this idea called strategic narrative. So I'd like to start out, Guillaume, and just ask you, you know, where did that come from? What, you know, what's the genesis story of the model?
So this model is a model I designed especially for B2B and expert firms. So I've been a consultant for a little bit over 30 years this year. And all my career, I've you know, had the opportunity to manage some of those firms, create, launch, create services for some of those firms in consulting, but also now I expanded my scope of work towards coaches, marketing agencies, designers, anybody who is interested in building a business from their knowledge and being sought after and being paid for this knowledge. So the idea of strategic narrative came because many years ago, I was still kind of early in my career, I was trying to identify what were some of the common points or the patterns that really make for a successful firm like this one. And at the time, I had worked with two large firms. I was, you know, and I had left and started my own. And one of the topics that came to me in the, you know, there was around the early 2000s was the topic of storytelling. It's really when the time it became more and more discussed in the business community. And so I started to be interested in this topic, and through my research year after year, trying to apply the principle of storytelling, I realized that there's a key difference between a story and a narrative. And if you think about your business, you know, there is, I noticed that there's not just one story you have to tell to make it successful. There's a series of them. There's actually a whole system, and maybe if you start counting, you'll find dozens, maybe hundreds sometimes. There is your personal story as a leader. There's the story that your team has in mind to a picture success. There are the stories that your clients tell you, you know, that they want to experience. That's your clients, maybe their success stories, hopefully. There are stories that are shared in the market to convey what is the norm. What is the reality to share what our perceived experience of reality is. And all of that forms a narrative. So if you think about your business, I like to use the metaphor of, it's a sailing metaphor. You know, your business is a sailing boat, right? It's a sailboat. Well, you have so many levers and things you can activate. And through all of these parameters, you're going to create a narrative that is favorable, hopefully, to where you want to go with your boat. So that's how I came about it. First, I was kind of calling it different ways. And many years ago, I started to use the word narrative. And then I thought, okay, well, this is really about the strategy of the business. Storytelling is very much perceived as a marketing tool, which is correct. But I have a much more comprehensive vision of what a narrative can do. And in fact, in my work, I see four areas that it can really address, not only marketing, but first and foremost, leadership. That's really, really a key area. And then obviously sales and operations. So these are really the four areas that work through that system. So that's how I came about it. And more recently, I was able to trademark this methodology and call it strategic narrative. And you said in the intro, you may, you know, for our listener here, that they may have heard about this term before, before and somewhere else. And that's true. You know, it's also used in other areas to identify the one story that you should tell to sell more and be more competitive and create the sizzle and attract more clients. And I have a bit of a different view on that. And that's what I do for my clients.
Well, I think you raised several good points there. And I like the term strategic narrative, because when I hear that and think about it, to me, narrative is definitely a two-way street. And it's not just the story you might be telling about your brand or your product, your service, your expertise. The narrative invites the idea that whoever the other person across the table may be, you know, customer, investor, employee, colleague, whatever, you're opening the door for that exchange to happen. And I don't want to misspeak about your model, but I'm presuming just by the name, the narrative allows for that two-way exchange to happen.
Well, you're spot on, Doug, and that's exactly why I made this distinction between a story and a narrative. A narrative is an open-ended piece. In fact, I like to say that stories are told, but narrative are co-created, right? So it's really through an exchange of not just language, but also behaviors and mindsets that we create a narrative. Narrative has this power to help people achieve incredible things. Like if you think about the narrative of our country, United States, and the narrative of France, because I'm a dual citizen, so I can speak for both. Our narratives, our national narrative enable us to, just rise to the biggest challenges, because we believe in the present and in the future of our states, for instance. So that's the narrative of a country. And equally at the business level for an organization, when you have a healthy narrative, when that conversation, that co-created discussion that you were just talking about, Doug, is happening really, well, you create a much more resilient organization. So, and that works whether you have a team or not. I work with solopreneurs, and I like to call on them to think about the conversation that they have with themselves sometimes, which is, in my opinion, the most invisible but the most powerful side of a business narrative, is what is happening between the ears and in the heart of a leader. It's really that conversation with yourself that creates that energy, that set of beliefs that can really help you, go beyond the biggest hurdles. And also sometimes, unfortunately, it can be also toxic for you if you have the wrong one. And that's when having a good group of colleagues or a coach or other peers in your field really comes instrumental, is to really check on that narrative on a regular basis.
I think that's exactly why the whole notion of mastermind groups or roundtables or cohorts, whatever you may want to call them, is so popular among many. And it is interesting to me that in all my experience, either creating, running, or facilitating those kind of group sessions, it's always interesting to see that the people that generally sign up for and say, I want to attend one of those, they are truly staying out ahead of the curve on trying to grow and expand and mature their own understanding about the work they're doing, or the whole concept of leadership and things of that sort. And coming together in those groups, as you mentioned, is a great forum to say, here's my story, here's what I'm thinking, and am I on track? Am I thinking crazy? Where are we here? Give me some feedback. And you can really get the power in those peer-to-peer advisory groups to have that gut check moment.
But it's interesting because with MetaHelm, my current business that celebrated 7 years this year, I finally launched a group program this summer that felt right. I had launched other group programs, but they're more like geared, they're more like workshops. Like, you know, we're trying to accomplish a specific process together and just nail it in like 3 weeks. There was this idea of a challenge. And last summer I thought, really there is something there with the group. And let me give another try to this. And I call this group a community in the first place. And I thought maybe I can gather 15 to 20 people and see where that lands. I'll keep it open-ended because that's very much my philosophy, because I believe narratives are open-ended. They really never end. They always evolve. And the feedback that I got after a few months is, first of all, the group is a lot smaller. It's about 7 people. So I thought about it as an experiment. And really focusing on co-creating a narrative that is healthy for the group and each of the participants. Everyone in this group is a business owner of an expert firm. And the feedback that I got is, Guillaume, it's I don't know how to describe it, but you created this sense that this group is bigger than us. You created this sense that someone said it's a annoyingly wonderful. Like because what this person, I'll expand a little bit on what I heard after that is, this person said, well, I know that I can come, you know, to this group, it's a safe place, and people will tell me the truth. And sometimes listening and hearing the truth is annoying. But it's wonderful because that's the most helpful thing you can get. So that these are some of the benefits of a group like that. And finally, someone said, "Yeah, I think you may have call this a mastermind." And Doug, because I'm French, you know, I tend to look at more at the definition of English words than maybe a native speaker, because sometimes I don't like to misinterpret things. And at first, the word mastermind was a little bit, I have to admit, I didn't know where it was coming from. I was hearing a lot of people using it and maybe misusing it. And I had some negative prejudice about this word. Like, what is this? Is this like a group where you have some kind of guru who's the master of your mind? Or And to find out that no, this is not at all what it is. And so I have to report to you, Doug, that on accident I was able to create that sense of mastermind, but that was not the flight plan in the beginning. It was like, so that's where we are in this group. So I asked people, like, well, then in that case, should we stop and change it? Oh, like, and they're like, oh, no, you don't dare changing anything. This is really, really valuable. And no one misses a call, except if they have an emergency. But this is one of my latest and I think most successful experiments. I have failed before many times at group programs, but I'm happy to report this one is positive. And I think it's like looping back to your comment, because I think for our listener here is important to really have clarity on this, is looking back to your comment, it's because of the narrative that I was able to help this group create, you know, that conversation that is about, you know, humanity, transparency, and at the same time, business reality. Like we talk about, you know, real business facts, actions, and things that, you know, make our businesses run better.
Yeah. Well, I think the world was introduced to the mastermind concept by Napoleon Hill in his book, Think and Grow Rich. I think that's the first widely accepted use of the word and descriptor of this group setting where mm-hmm. people of like mind come together and they share experiences, they ask questions, they seek advice, they seek support, they seek direction. And I love What'd you say? Amazingly annoying, or what was the word I used to use? Anyway.
Amazing. No, it was the opposite. Annoyingly wonderful.
Annoyingly wonderful. Yeah. So, I couldn't help but chuckle. I know some of the most dynamic groups that I've had a chance to either be a part of or help guide and facilitate is it gets to that level. And people can have some fun being vulnerable and transparent, and often being told, "You're thinking about this the wrong way. That's a bad story that you're telling yourself. You need to do something different." And I can think of dozens of examples of people coming to that meeting and bringing an issue or an idea and having it totally blown up in the meeting. But it's usually always because somebody else or several somebodies have said, "No, I did that too. I tried that in my business and it was a colossal disaster, and here's why." And they lay it all out. So it's a little bit of self-preservation for the one who's bringing the idea that learns that it may not be a good idea.
Right, exactly. So it's that is right there. It's like your insurance policy almost.
Well, you've got a really interesting graphic on your website, and folks, we're going to have links to Guillaume's info in our show notes as always, but you've got an interesting diagram. On the left side, it's kind of a classic mind design. It's the circles all laid out on the page with squiggly lines connecting them, and it's a little random and it's definitely unorganized. There's a lot of content, a lot of theme, and a lot of elements in that diagram, but it's a jumble. And if we're all honest with ourselves, most of the time when we come up with a thought about our business, it goes through this sort of jumbled execution or process in our brains. And sometimes we drive ourselves crazy overthinking an idea, but then contrast that maze of confusion with your strategic narrative diagram. It's a nice, healthy dot in the middle with all these peripheral circles swirling around it and connected and interconnected. And for me, the immediate graphic impression when I looked at your website was, yeah, that chaos on the left is what most of us that are trying to run a business we go through when we do our decision process. There's not a method, there's not a prescriptive approach to have a healthy discussion, even with ourselves, about the matter. So I'm just sharing. That was my takeaway looking at that diagram, that if we could do more to stratify and consistently map out our narrative process to get to a decision, it sure looks like a healthier picture.
Well, that's the whole point of my and I would you like me to share it here with you on screen? I know would you know some people will not necessarily see it, but for people watching on YouTube, I can just flash it so that people see what exactly we're talking about.
Now let's just because the majority of my listeners are audio streaming only, let's just try to talk it through as best you might.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah. So this diagram came from that realization that we may sometimes look in directions to improve our business and grow it that may be the wrong one just because we don't have a bird's eye picture of it. We don't consider the connections between all aspects of our businesses. And so I drew this diagram from the hypothesis that a narrative is a system of stories, right? And I started thinking like this as I was working with a mid-sized firm about 10 years ago. And I was the size of the firm was about 2,000 people. And I was working with the marketing department to realign all of the poles, all of the center of expertise, the clusters of expertise, and noticed that one practice was saying one thing, one other practice was saying something slightly different about the same topic. There was really those lacks of connections, right? And I started mapping these out and suggested that we look more holistically And not only at the marketing level, but also at the operational level, at the sales level. And we also got our leadership involved in that. So that's where this diagram comes from. This idea that really when you look at the big picture, you can really see those missing dots, those tangled connections and so on. And then more recently, when I mapped out what would be the 12 areas in your business that you always want to have, you know, a big picture view on. So I mapped out those 12 practices. And then I thought, okay, well, it's just like when you sail a boat. Then it turns out I'm a sailor, but it's exactly the same. You have to have a compass. And maybe that inner compass you have is your inner narrative. And sometimes you need to keep it in check. You need to have, a specific direction, right? You need to have a vision for your business. Or so what is the vision that you have for when you arrive at your destination and you view the outside world, and what will be the impact of your business on this outside world, not just on your business, which is for me just a chunk of what a business vision is. So I'm more happy to talk about holistic business vision, you know, to really stretch the thinking around, you know, the outside. And then your business, you know, if you want to sell properly, you have to have a keel, and that keel grounds you, you know, keep you stable. And the metaphor here is how is about your productivity, and hopefully it's a healthy set of productivity practices. Like, you're going to go through storms. Yes, it's not going to be always fun. You're going to have to make tough decisions, brutal tacks, you know, to avoid rifts and storms and such. And your keel, your habits, right? The set of habits that form your productivity. This is going to be really important right there. So once you have those elements, you know, laid out in front of you, and I'm currently working on a set of cards to actually represent them, and you start connecting the dots between those. Oh, I see. If my sales are not effective enough, right? If I'm not onboarding enough client, aka passengers on my sailboat, right? Maybe it's because my boat is not safe enough. My keel is not strong enough. My productivity level is not settled enough. So we got to work on this. So thinking like this, you know, like what you noticed on the diagram here on my website, helps you really get to the root causes of where you might find efficiencies or rethink your business more easily. So that's really what this diagram is about.
You know, you packed a lot in that narrative there, and I want to break it down a little bit. One is the strategic lens, the strategic vision. I frequently run into entrepreneurs and even some of the folks in the corporate world that I coach. There's this challenge of starting to and being able to genuinely think strategically. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the way I've come to describe it to people, it's my 30 plus years of observation in the business world. We have this general tradition of people getting promoted up. You know, they go to work at a young age as an individual contributor. They get hired in to be on a team doing something. Whether you're an attorney or a CPA or any other engineer, architect, whatever, you're usually always brought in at that somewhat entry level, and you deliver based on that individual contribution. If your work is recognized, you get a chance at a promotion. They say, you know, well, you're going to be the next team leader here. Now you get into the people game. But yet, unless it is very specifically talked about, the person making that first promotion doesn't get introduced to strategic thinking. They just assume, well, okay, I used to do all this by myself. Now I've got a team. I just need to do more. You know, I put that in air quotes, folks, for those listening. And that works. You get some recognition for it, and guess what? You get promoted again. So now you're on the so-called management track, and you're going to have probably more people under your control. And yet again, unless it's spoken specifically, you still don't think strategically. You're worried about deadlines and project delivery and certain KPI type levels of performance. And you get really ingrained in that thinking because that's why you got the last two promotions. And so it really gets positively enforced, but I would argue in a negative way. The further up the organization you go, and this is particularly true for those entrepreneurs that own businesses that have teams developing, you've got to have that ability to look at the bigger picture. And you and I in the green room, we shared our love of travel, you in sailboats and me in small single engine airplanes. But one of the first observations I had when I got my pilot's license and went out on some of my cross-country trips was the interesting dynamic of, you know, from 5, 6, or 8,000 feet up in the air, you get to see the landscape, you get to see the turns in the road, you get to see what is probably miles down the road for that car that's making its way down the road. And if you think about them, they're sitting behind the wheel, they're not seeing those turns and twists in advance. They may know the road because they've traveled it a lot, but if it's a new road to them, they don't know where those turns and twists may be. They just have to experience them in the moment. But with a strategic lens, like in the cockpit of a small plane at 5, 6, or 8,000 feet, you can say, hey, look out, you're going to make a hard left turn in 2 miles, you know, it's going to be tough, you better slow down, you know, and it's just a different lens from which to look at things.
It's interesting because I meet those same people when they exit big firms. They've spent 10, 20, 30 years, and now they go, oh, I would love to run my own business. And I'm so expert at, I don't know, merger and acquisitions or project management or organizational design. Yeah, and I have a really, you know, I have a substantial Rolodex or, you know, iPhone contact list. I think I can do this. And they jump ship. Literally, they build their own skiff and maybe with a partner or two and a small team, and they go on their own. And that's when they come to realization that all the habits and the norms, the processes and the mindset that they used to have before are getting in their way. In some ways it's very positive, but a lot of the code has to be rewritten. And that's when I run into situations where I help them change their narrative, you know, completely change that. And it's interesting because you mentioned the airplane view of planet Earth. It's one of the first thing I ask them to do. We do an exercise and we look at the 3-year vision that is not only about their business. I think I try to drive the conversation 50% about their business, but 50% also about the landscape. Like, well, what will they see? What are they seeing today? And what will they see in 3 years around them in their industry, but also affecting the world at large? Maybe it's society or their community, or so that's a mindset that works really well, that really matters to people who are, I would say, more conscious leaders or soulful leaders, where, you know, they don't just want to build a consultancy that is financially viable, but also one that they love because it aligns with their value. So it's really interesting to hear you describing the first part of the story and me seeing this. Oh yeah, I see the same thing when those same people are not in the organization anymore. Like, it's the second part of the story, you know, working with the entrepreneurs.
It's all about the classic teaching that Stephen Covey used in his Seven Habits book. You know, one of the principles of the seven is begin with the end in mind.
Right.
And if you don't do the work to at least attempt to forecast that future picture,
yeah,
whether it's your product offering, your service offering, the market you're going to participate in, or the kind of people you want to attract to do your work. All of those things are variables into that bigger picture.
Right, right. One of the, I would add to that, Doug, that one of the, at least for me in my area of specialization, one of the key parameters is recognizing that experts, deliver the service, and they are also the service or the product themselves. Their brain is really so close to that. This is all sorts of very, very close connections, and it's linked to their emotions, to their even their health sometimes. So that type of concept and conversation, start with the end of mind, always have to be looked at with that special characteristics. It's like, the expert, like when I work on sales with my clients, really the topic of detachment, being detached of the fact whether a sale is going to go through or not, is really, really important. Really, really important. So when we look at the end in mind, we always have to account for that factor. So back to my navigation metaphor, there's a lot of the winds that are going to be coming from the person at the helm, herself or himself or themselves.
Well, I've always wondered if there's any study that's ever been done about the notion of people that are easily able to rise up and think about things in a strategic way, that big picture thinking. I've always been curious whether or not that is limited to some personality patterns, people. In other words, certain personalities are more prone to think big picture than others. I've got to believe somewhere in the blend of humanity that's a true thesis, but it still, I would argue, it can be a learned behavior. You can learn how to make yourself think of that big picture. And when it comes to personal planning, I was taught a method a number of years ago that I really like, and it's a simple one that says, hey, Guillaume, let's fast forward a few years, 5 years from now. Let's say I bump into you at an airport and we haven't seen each other in these 5 years. But I look at you and I say, wow, you look so healthy, so energized, so exciting, and where are you going? And the real question is, what's happened during these last 5 years to get you to this point of, really dynamic presence? And and you tell me that you're going to take a trip all the way around the world. You've got all this, globe hopping thing planned, and you're so excited, and your business is thriving such that you can go away for 45 days and it's not going to matter. And the business will run itself in those days. Obviously a big achievement as an owner or leader to have a team that's capable of doing that. But that, to me, that was a great word picture to get the narrative started of saying, okay, so where do you really want to go?
That's very, very powerful. I heard before another version of that small exercise. It was not exactly framed the same, but the question was more, what has happened in that year that makes you look so successful and good and so
right.
And then but what I like in your version is like it adds the future lens to it.
Yeah,
I really like that.
Yeah,
that's very powerful.
Well, there are many ways and many things that we haven't yet talked about, and I'm looking at the clock, and unfortunately we're up on time for this episode, but tell the folks the best way to get a hold of you if they're interested in learning more.
Very easy. Go to metahelm.com, MetaHelm, where we guide the guides, I would say. And then
I like it.
MetaHelm.com, and you'll find a number of resources there, including a free assessment of where you'll be able to discover with the 12 areas. I just kind of touched on them. You play with that assessment and look around and see what resonates. And if you are interested in having a conversation with me, just shoot me an email. My email is on my website.
Very good. Well, Guillaume, one last time, thank you for sitting in. I think this whole strategic narrative idea is a very important concept for leaders at all levels to think about.
Well, I'm glad that you find, a potential application in other fields than mine. So thank you so much for having me, Doug.
You bet. Well, folks, with that, we're going to wrap up, say goodbye. I do want to remind you, as always, we've got a video version of this over on YouTube, channel by the same name, Leadership Powered by Common Sense. Hop over there, leave us a comment, leave me a note if you have an idea of a topic we haven't yet covered. Always looking for talented and gifted guests like Guillaume here. And we thank you for your following and your support. But with that, we're going to say goodbye, sign off, go out there, make it a great day.
You've been listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense, hosted by Doug Thorpe. If you would like to know more about the coaching and advisory services he provides, visit DougThorpe.com.